is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Alex, I think we're back on. All right, so let's rewind. Let's pretend the last 20 seconds didn't happen, everybody. Can you do, I do this with my kids sometimes, you know. All right, we're going in reverse. Good morning. Let's start there. It's Friday, December 18th, and TGIF. Who is thankful for Friday? Don't raise your hands if you're driving, but just give me a little woot woot. It is Friday. I'm Katie Hyde, filling in for Steve Gruber. It has been a great week with you. This is my last day in the studio, at least for the Steve Gruber Show. You can catch me weekdays in the afternoon on the Michigan Talk Network giving the news. But it has been a great week here on the show, and I know that you will give Steve a wonderful welcome back in the studio on Monday when he returns, and you'll have all sorts of things to talk to him about. Well, in tradition of his show, I know he has these free-for-all Fridays where he kind of just throws everything up and kind of goes off script a little and wants to hear from you. And I will keep that tradition rolling. So as we do with free-for-all Friday, you can call in with comments, you can call in with your opinions or your thoughts on something. No topic is required. I'm not going to tell you what you have to talk about. We just want to hear from you. Our number here is 888-900-9966. Again, that number is 888-900-9966. We'd love to hear from you. Let's take a look at some of the news that's happening late yesterday and overnight. With the holidays fast approaching, the events of San Bernardino and Paris are on everyone's mind. And even with the premiere of the Star Wars movie last night, and crowded theaters where people are sitting ducks for Mad Men, the thoughts of terrorist violence are certainly running through our minds. On Thursday, President Barack Obama says U.S. intelligence and counterterrorism officials don't have any specific credible information that suggests a potential terrorist attack against the U.S. during the holidays. Let's hear from our president.
At this moment, our intelligence and counterterrorism professionals do not have any specific and credible information about an attack on the homeland. That said, we have to be vigilant. As I indicated in my address to the nation last week, we are in a new phase of terrorism, including lone actors and small groups of terrorists, like those in San Bernardino. Because they are smaller, often self-initiating, self-motivating, they're harder to detect. And that makes it harder to prevent. We're stepping up our efforts to prevent attacks here at home. As I said, the NCTC is constantly sharing information with our state and local partners. Across the country, more than 100 joint terrorism task forces are the action arm of this fight. Federal, state, and local experts all working together to disrupt threats. At the state level, fusion cells are receiving tips and pushing information out to local law enforcement. And finally, one of our greatest weapons against terrorism is our own strength and resilience as a people. Now, that means staying vigilant. If you see something suspicious, say something to law enforcement. It also means staying united as one American family, remembering that our greatest allies in this fight are each other, Americans of all faiths and all backgrounds. And when Americans stand together, nothing can beat us.
That's President Barack Obama speaking yesterday about the fact that counterterrorism officials don't have any specific credible information, but pleading with the American people to please be vigilant. And I wonder for you, how does that look for you? What does it mean to be vigilant? Rick Ector is going to be with us later on in the program. He's from Legally Armed in Detroit talking about owning a handgun, and perhaps that is one of the ways that you will choose to remain vigilant. We'll talk with him. On yesterday's edition of the Steve Gruber Show, we interviewed Congressman Tim Walberg from Michigan's 7th District. He mentioned that the budget bill passed in the House earlier this week didn't have everything in it that he and other Republicans had hoped. In fact, Speaker Paul Ryan praised parts of the $1.1 trillion tax and spending bills that would prevent a government shutdown, but he did call the bill a bipartisan compromise. Let's hear from him.
You know I don't like this process, right? I mean, you know that we inherited a process, a cake that was pretty much more than half baked. I don't like the way that these bills come together because I think we should do these separately, individually, through what we call regular order. That's why I just started this press conference saying next year, we're going to do things differently. Next year, when we have a fresh start, we're doing things differently because I don't think this is the way that we should be governing. But we are where we are and we have a bipartisan compromise where, by the way, I think we've got some good wins. And look, Democrats won some things, too. That's the nature of bipartisan compromises. And so the way I look at this is we have made the best of the situation we have. There are some really good wins in here for the American people. There are very good wins in here for the economy, for job creators, for taxpayers. There are some important developments in here that will help us build a confident America. But as Congress works in the new year, I want to make sure that we get back to what is called regular order so that we have a system that operates like the founders intended. And I feel very good that we're getting off on that good start next year.
The Republican candidates are only a few days removed from Tuesday night's debate stage, but they're still going back at it. An Iowa radio show host has apologized for his tweet during Tuesday night's debate, saying that Carly Fiorina goes full, and these are his words, V-word during the debate. Carly Fiorina was on Fox News with Megyn Kelly last night and talked about being attacked for a woman while running for president.
Well, I've been called the B-word, so now I guess I'm going to be called the V-word. What's amazing to me is I told an American story last night in my opening comments. I told my story, just like every other candidate has told their story. Mm-hmm. So it's inexplicable to me why this major surrogate of Ted Cruz thought that was playing the V card. But the more important point is this. This gentleman is more than a radio show talk host. He is a major surrogate for Ted Cruz and a major endorser. And this is why Ted Cruz cannot possibly beat Hillary Clinton.
Well, because, I mean, is he responsible for everything his surrogates say?
Well, this is a major member of Ted Cruz's campaign. Ted Cruz relies on him to speak for him. In fact, he was speaking for Ted Cruz last night. So this is the Cruz campaign. And I think we need to be realistic about what we're going to face with Hillary Clinton.
You know, you have something in common with her in that regard, and that's probably the only thing. That will probably conclude the list of things you have in common. But she's going through some sexist attacks, and we'll go through more. And you are too. And I know viewers, they don't want to hear it. It's like, okay, whatever. Everybody's got their troubles, but it is a recurring theme.
And Alex, we can go ahead and stop that clip there. There's an interesting Michigan tie. According to the Facebook profile, this radio host attended Grand Rapids Community College, and apparently he apologized because his wife gave him a hard time. And it makes me think that behind every man who says something stupid is a woman slapping him upside the head, demanding an apology. You're listening to Katie Hyde filling in on The Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Good morning, it's 6:18. I'm Katie Hyde from Michigan Talk Network, filling in for Steve Gruber all this week. This hour brought to you by Mesa Good Health, Good Business, and Great Schools. We're going to go a little softer route in this segment, and we have a week until Christmas. Can you believe it? I say this every year. It sneaks up. I mean, December 25th comes on the same day every year, but it just seems that Christmas sneaks up so quickly. And maybe you need to finish your holiday shopping, or you're hosting a party and you're trying to get ready for that. Maybe you're in a constant state of cleaning frenziedness or trying to get everything around or those gifts wrapped, or maybe this is a really tough time for you because some loved ones that are normally gathered around the tree are not going to be there this year for whatever reason. And I think it's always good every day, but especially at this time of year, just to pause and look at the reason why we celebrate this holiday. And I came across a blog that I'd like to share with you today. It's written by Jason Sorosky. He's a writer and a musician. And his blog says he taps into his experiences as a worship pastor, a classroom teacher, a husband, and a homeschooling father of five to relate stories from real life experiences. And his latest blog is called Just Drop the Blanket. And he writes, this week, a Charlie Brown Christmas aired on national primetime television for the 50th time. In a world where the latest, greatest technology is outdated in a matter of months and social media trends come and go in a matter of days, 50 years of anything becomes quite meaningful. He writes, I am a fan of all things nostalgic and all things Christmas, and so when the two are combined, I am hooked. And the Charlie Brown Christmas special falls squarely into that category. Sorosky continues, I was in the first grade back when they still performed Christmas pageants in schools. He says less than 50 years, but still a very long time ago. And our class performed a version of the Charlie Brown Christmas. Since I was kind of a bookworm and already had a blue blanket, I was chosen to play the part of Linus. As Linus, I memorized Luke 2, verses 18 through 14, and that scripture has been hidden in my heart ever since. But while working so diligently to learn those lines, there is one important thing I didn't notice then and didn't notice until now. Right in the middle of speaking, Linus drops the blanket. Charlie Brown is best known for his uniquely striped shirt, and Linus is most associated with his ever-present security blanket. Throughout the story of Peanuts, Lucy, Snoopy, Sally, and others all work to no avail to separate Linus from his blanket. And even through his security blanket remains a major source of ridicule for otherwise mature and thoughtful Linus. He simply refuses to give it up until this moment when he simply drops it. In that climactic scene, when Linus shares what Christmas is all about, he drops his security blanket, and I am now convinced that this is intentional. The author goes on to write, more telling is the specific moment when he drops it, and he utters these words. Let's go to that clip.
Everything I do turns into a disaster. I guess I really don't know what Christmas is all about. Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown. I can tell you what Christmas is all about. Lights, please. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night, and lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid, and the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
That's from the Peanuts Christmas special. You probably recognize that that's Linus there on stage when he drops the blanket and tells us the real meaning of Christmas. I'm going to go back and finish the blog by Jason Sorosky. He says, looking at it now, it's pretty clear what Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts, was saying through this, and it's so simple and so brilliant. The birth of Jesus separates us from our fears. The birth of Jesus frees us from the habits we are unable or unwilling to break ourselves. The birth of Jesus allows us to simply drop the false security we have been grasping onto so tightly and learn to trust and cling to Him instead. As he concludes, Jason Sorosky goes on to write these words. The world of 2015 can be a scary place, and most of us find ourselves grasping to something temporal for security, whatever that thing may be. Essentially, 2015 is a world in which it is very difficult for us to fear not. And I think as I break away from the blog just slightly, we can probably all think of at least a half a dozen events right off the top of our heads, and many more if we had the time, where we say, ugh, I'm freaked out. I lay down to sleep at night and I have a lot of anxiety. I get up in the morning and my stomach is churning. I listen to the news. I listen to Steve Gruber. I watch, I read, and This world freaks me out. I'm freaked out for my kids. I'm freaked out for my loved ones, the students that I teach, the people that I worked with, the direction this country is going in. And it's really hard to take those words to heart and say, fear not. I don't know how I'm going to do that. So Roski ends his blog by saying this, but in the midst of fear and insecurity, this simple cartoon image from 1965, the Peanuts Christmas classic, continues to live on as an inspiration for us to seek true peace and true security in the one place it has always been and can always still be found. Blogger Jason Soroski writing about the real meaning of Christmas. And I read that. It just gave me the peace that I needed this holiday season. It's so easy to get wrapped up in the rushed feeling that this holiday can bring, but to step back and look, and as he's writing, say, let's drop the blanket. Let's look at why we are celebrating this holiday. It's 6:25. I'm Katie Hyde from Michigan Talk Network, filling in on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
The Steve Gruber Show. This is Katie Hyde from the Michigan Talk Network, filling in for Steve Gruber all this week. This hour brought to you by Mesa, good health, good business, and great schools. The Army has decided to send Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl to a general court-martial where he will face two charges, desertion and misbehavior before the enemy. Bergdahl is the soldier who allegedly deserted his unit in Afghanistan and was held captive by the Taliban for nearly 5 years. The Army announced he will be arraigned for his court-martial next week. But there are some important facts to keep in mind regarding Bergdahl's case as we move forward with it. And there are some unique aspects of the military justice system that will help us understand that. Joining me on the line is Charles Cully Stimson, a leading expert on criminal law, military law, all things military. And he works at the Heritage Foundation Center for Legal and Judicial Studies. Welcome to the program.
Katie, thanks for having me.
No problem. First, what do we need to understand about the military justice system?
Well, and I appreciate you reading my intro there on my Daily Signal blog post on this. The military justice system is very similar in some ways to what we know from watching Law and Order or the civilian criminal justice system. We have a jury. The accused is presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt by legal and competent evidence. He's entitled to a defense counsel, both a military defense counsel free of charge and a civilian defense counsel at no expense to the government. There's a prosecutor. It's open so the public can view it. And so it would look very similar to a regular trial somewhere there in Michigan at a regular superior court. Now, there are differences, too, and that's, I think, the thing that people are interested in.
And what are some of those differences?
Well, of course, all the lawyers are in uniform, except for the civilian lawyer. The trials tend to be shorter because military judges, and I'm a former military judge, tend to move things along. And I don't rush justice, but these are not complicated cases for the most part we have in the military justice system. We have some. Bergdahl's case won't be that complicated. He either did or didn't leave his post with the intent to remain away permanently. That's desertion. And he either shamefully abandoned his post during a wartime in the presence of the enemy, or he didn't. Those are the facts of the case, and so any Michigan prosecutor could sort out how to prove that up, and it would take, the actual trial would take a couple weeks at most.
You mentioned some of the overall details of the case, but I think what I'm hearing out there is there's a lot of confusion about what he did, what he didn't. Some of the people that served with him say one thing, then we're hearing something else. So can you walk me through some of those confusing details?
Yeah, I think there's three big things here. One is you have to completely put to the side, when thinking about his court-martial, the fact that the administration traded five Taliban guys from Gitmo to get him back. That will have very little to do, if anything, to do with the court-martial. You may hate the deal, you may think the deal was fair, but that will have nothing to do with the court-martial. Number two, whether people went out to look for him, and they did, that's for sure, and whether anyone died as a result of it, and I think there's a debate on one side or the other. The defense says no, the government says yes, or some people in the government say yes. Will have nothing to do with the trial on the merits, in other words, whether he's guilty or not. If he's found guilty, then that would be part of the sentencing case, which, by the way, in the military justice system, We don't wait a week or two or a month or whatever for sentencing. If there's a guilty finding, literally the next day you go right to a sentencing phase, the second phase of the trial. And then that would be aggravating evidence if people were killed and not mitigating evidence if no one was killed, but the defense will have an opportunity to put on mitigating evidence too for their sentence.
Well, it sounds like things are very efficient there.
They are. They are efficient, as you would hope. The taxpayer is paying the bill, and we get down to business. But it's, you know, the judge's job in the military justice system, and these are active duty judge advocates general or reserve senior officers like me who are in the judge advocate general corps who've served on active duty with many tours. Their job is to ensure that the trial is conducted in a fair and orderly manner, and they do. And a lot of them have a lot of military justice experience or civilian and military justice experience in my case. And we move things along, but we give every side, especially the defense, their fair share of time to make their case.
What does the court there have to do to prove desertion, and how easy is that to do in a military case like this?
Yeah, so there are a lot of people currently charged with desertion. I don't want to say a lot compared to the entire military, but there are people charged with desertion every month in the military across all the services. You don't know their names. I don't know their names. The only reason we know Bergdahl's name is because of the Taliban 5. The government would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt each and every element of the offense, which is that he willfully abandoned his post and intended to remain away permanently. End of story. If they can prove the specific intent that he intended to remain away permanently, and the jury is convinced beyond a reasonable doubt as to each element, boom, guilty. By the way, you don't have unanimity in juries in the military justice system. You only need two-thirds of the jurors to be convinced to convict. So there's no hung juries in the military. None. It's either two-thirds, find them guilty, or if you can't get the two-thirds, it's not guilty on that charge. The misbehavior for the enemy is a little bit different. It's the way they charge it is he shamefully abandoned his post in the presence of the enemy. And shameful is defined under military law. And so if they find that he abandoned his post in a war zone in the presence of the enemy, and they prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, then the jury must find him guilty. If they don't, the jury must find him not guilty.
What kind of punishment is Bergdahl facing if convicted?
Yeah, so the weird thing about the military justice system is we have hardly any mandatory minimum sentences. So believe it or not, even though he's facing a possible life sentence here, he's also facing a punishment of no punishment. If the jury decides, let's say they convict him, and then the defense puts on a bunch of stuff that says, yeah, he was held by the Haqqani network, an outgrowth of the Taliban, he was tortured, he did this to him, 5 years in this horrible hellhole, the jury could say, you know what, that's enough. And the conviction alone would serve as his sentence. They can also, in addition to incarceration, bust him down to E1, which is the lowest of his pay grade. They can take money away from him. They can discharge him from the military with a bad conduct or a dishonorable discharge, and those are the four possible punishments, and any combination thereof, by the way.
And what's your take on which direction this trial will go?
To trial. It's just totally unfair for me, given the fact that I'm still in the reserves as an appellate government counsel, and I've been an appellate defense counsel and a judge, to put my thumb on the scale. I think he's going to get a fair trial. I think that the judge will make sure of it. How it turns out is anyone's guess. I know people have opinions about it, but, you know, he's presumed innocent under the Constitution. I think conservatives like me believe in the rule of law and believe in that presumption of innocence until and unless he's proven guilty.
And if he is not found guilty of these charges, can he serve again? Or is his military career done?
He's done. He's going to get out of the military one way or the other, Katie. I mean, if he's found not guilty, they'll administratively process him. I'm sure he wants out of the military. That's what his defense lawyer says, and I believe Gene Seidel, who's the civilian defense counsel, he's a friend of mine, I'm sure Bergdahl wants out. So either way, at the end of the day, Bergdahl is getting out of the military.
Cully Stimson, I can talk this morning. Cully Stimson, thank you so much for joining us, a legal expert or leading expert on criminal law and military law from the Heritage Foundation. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
Sure thing, Katie. Thank you.
You're welcome. This hour is brought to you by Mesa, good health, good business, and great schools. You're listening to Katie Hyde from the Michigan Talk Network, filling in all this week on The Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show, American Values with Midwestern Common Sense.
Morning. It's 15 before the hour. I'm Katie Hyde from Michigan Talk Network, filling in on the Steve Gruber Show. This hour brought to you by Mesa, good health, good business, and great schools. With me on the line is Rick Echter. He's a National Rifle Association credentialed firearms trainer. He provides classes and training in Detroit for students at his firearms school. And he joins us on the show this morning. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am wonderful. And I don't know if you remember, I was hanging out in the studio last week with Steve. I was a little more quiet, but I told him my husband and I are looking at getting some training done just with the events of 2015 and all these terrorists running around. And I've come to a place where I don't feel as safe. Out there. And I'm guessing I speak for a lot of women, too. So are you seeing more women sign up for your courses?
Yeah, there's been a dramatic shift in the demographics of people taking the classes over the last 5 years. And it's at the point now where the majority of people who are in my classes are women. It seems as though the men have already received their training some time ago. But it's a welcome trend. Women do very well. They are seeing consistent negative reports about violent crime in the media. And now we have the specter of terrorism, and they're doing it. And I want to encourage them to continue to do so.
In my group of friends, we'll have conversations like these. You know, what's the solution to violent crimes? More guns, the solution. Less guns. These are the kind of conversations. And one of the things that get brought up is, I don't think I would feel safe with my kids in a house with a gun. Can you speak to that?
Oh, yeah. That's a common thing that comes up. You know, as a gun owner, you have an absolute duty to make sure that that firearm does not come into the possession of a child, especially a child who is not in your custody at that moment where you're actively watching that child. There's a couple of things you can do. There's a quick action safe that you could have where you come home from work and maybe you don't want to wear the gun all day while you're at home. You throw it in the quick action safe. You know, it's got like a keypad. There's several digits on the keypad, and maybe you have a four-digit code. You know, pop in your code number, and the top will pop open in a jiffy in case you need, you know, immediate quick access to it. Me, I do a variety of things. You know, one, I'm just comfortable to the point where I just wear it all the time. I wear it all day. And when I'm not wearing it, I throw it in the quick action safe.
Well, and then it doesn't become, at least to kids like this, a forbidden object. It's just something that is around, and that's just a matter of fact of life.
Well, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with guns being a part of American way of life. It's our history, and it's our tradition. You know, we, as a nation, you know, shortly after we were founded, you know, guns were pervasive. They were everywhere, and everyone learned how to use them. Children were exposed to them at a very young age. They were taught firearm safety. They were instructed by their parents, you know, in the home. And actually, as late as maybe the 50s, kids would bring their long guns to middle school and would actually shoot at school as a part of structured activities or out, you know, in the designated shooting area at school. So it's not anything that's foreign to our history. It's just we've gotten away from it.
Sure, and that's definitely not anything you'd hear about in our mainstream media. Now, Rick, if we take a class with you, walk us through that. How long are the classes, and what would we learn?
The class is mandated by the state to at least be 8 hours long. So typically, I start the class at 9 or 10 o'clock, and 8 hours later or so, add in some breaks. We'd probably be done sometime after 6. Variety of topics that are covered, the defensive mindsets, firearms law, your duties, rights, and responsibilities, handgun fundamentals. There'll be a practical shooting exercise. We talked about handgun buying considerations and additional shooting opportunities beyond class. Because the last thing that I would want to see is for someone to take just one class and feel that they're ready to forever be able to, you know, defend themselves. It's like driving. You know, you get your driver's license, you don't practice. You got to continue to practice so that you get better. Once you get that driver's license in your hand, you are not going to be the best possible driver you can be unless you get out there and practice. And the same thing applies when you learn how to accurately and safely handle a firearm. You got to go practice.
Absolutely. And what kind of feedback or comments are you getting from the female students that are enrolled in your training?
The most consistent feedback that I get is I didn't know it was so much fun, and I should have done it years ago. And I'm like, yeah. And one of the great things about how I market the classes, you know, I'm all over social media, and I really have developed relationships with prospective customers over a period of years. You know, when you do the I started out on MySpace, Facebook, email newsletter, you know, and those types of things. And then finally when they do it, they're like, wow, I didn't know it was, you know, this much fun. And I'm like, yeah, I've been trying to tell you. But, you know, and there's some women that really, really have some negative perceptions about guns from a lot of things that they've heard from people or common tropes and stereotypes they see in the mass media and feature films and that type of thing. And they don't do it until they feel like their back is absolutely up against the wall.
Right. Rick Ector, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry we have such a short time today, but great thoughts and great insight.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Glad to be on and look forward to being on soon.
Yes, and have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.